Yo.
Hey. Can you hear me?
You listening to
Hashtag. W-A-W. What a week.
What a week.
Welcome to Wow What a Week on the African Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify and all other platforms.
This is
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. You can't make this shit up.
Thank you for joining us once again. Some of you may have seen the SABC finally has a brand new board. Maybe I should submit my CV. Maybe it's too early for it. No, I think they're still upset about Musuneri, so maybe I won't. Anyway, on the note of a range of people, we've also got a relatively new list of interviewees today, so let's get going. Our first guest for You Can't Make This Shit Up, he's lived in a range of places and performed in some interesting locations and won a range of awards as well. Quite the jet setter and a biker. And he looks it too. Please give a wild welcome to Loiso Gona.
Yay!
What's up, Loy?
I'm good.
Welcome to Wow What a Week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You cycled here.
Yeah.
Tell us about the cycling lifestyle that has become an integral part of your life.
I don't know. I just don't want to die of a heart attack at 50.
But what about of a taxi or a truck?
Actually, they're very courteous.
Are you for real?
Yeah, taxis are very courteous. I mean, also, I don't, you know, like, it depends what the people that I'm concerned about the most. As if I cycle like on a Saturday morning and the people were coming from Groove from Friday. So you slept over at a shorty's house or whatever.
Yes.
And then the person's still drunk.
Yes.
Right? Because they slept at 5 and now it's like 9. You know what I mean? So those are the most dangerous because they're still drunk from last night and they don't have the concentration and they haven't slept. So those are the people I'm scared of more than taxi drivers. Taxi drivers, for the most part, sleep.
I've actually argued it a lot that the person most likely to give you a right of way or to allow you to squeeze in is actually a taxi driver.
Yeah.
Other drivers are very selfish.
Yeah. Most drivers have no sense of courtesy.
Yeah.
But I mean, taxi, you know what's the worst thing for cyclists, actually? You know, like on the, because you usually cycle on the closer to the pavement.
Oh, yes.
So people who don't cut off their branches.
Oh, yes.
The branches, like, that's why I have
so to,
like,
do you sometimes ride the bike?
I try to go around it. Also, potholes are bad.
Yes.
Because if a pothole is close to the pavement, I have to go into the road.
Oh, yes. And a car might be there.
So it's, and also for me, I used to cycle at night as well, which was great. And now I can't because you can't see the potholes.
But don't you have a little light, like a little lamp thing?
Yeah, because it only shows you like right in front of you.
Yes.
It doesn't like give you a full scope because potholes sometimes they creep up on you. You know what I mean? Like it's very, so for me, I don't cycle at night anymore and I, you know, but I generally cycle everywhere.
You've lived, in fact, you live a lot in London.
Yes.
And in fact, I was at your show this past week and you speak a lot about London. So places like London, in fact, Europe generally.
Right.
Are very cyclist friendly.
Right.
Is that where you picked up this?
No, I think.
Cycling.
Actually, Johannesburg, before like a full-blown Group Areas Act vibe, Joburg had the most bicycles in the world.
Jeez.
You got to Google that. It's actually, yeah. There's a picture of the city of Johannesburg and black people are in the city and they're all cycling.
Mm.
And then what happened was people were moved. Now, I can't cycle every day from Soweto to town.
Yes, and that kind of
broke that culture. Mm. But I think like, you know, sometimes I look at politicians and their ideology. I remember the city of Joburg was putting all these bike lanes in the city. And the EFF, particularly Julius, was like, this is a white idea.
Mm.
I'm like, what are you talking about? It's the simplest way to transport yourself.
Yes.
You become self-sufficient. It was like, oh, no, this thing is only for white people. And I, you know, like, so for me, I was really disappointed at that kind of ideology. Mm-hmm. I was like, nah, man, people can.
Our uncles used to cycle in the 50s and 60s.
So for me, ideologically, we might have a clash on that particular issue.
Actually, one of the reasons there were so many, especially black men, on bicycles back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, is because if you worked at the mine, often you were given a bicycle.
Yeah.
As a bonus. Yeah. Or as a Christmas.
Right, right.
You know? And I had an uncle who lived in Yeovil in the 60s and moved to Dube, Soweto.
Right.
And I remember when he came home, I was still a child.
Right.
He came back with a pair of shorts and a bicycle.
Oh, that's fine.
That's what he had to show for.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, man.
It was wild.
Yeah, but, you know, like, even the idea of transport, it's bizarre because I, like, well, transportation is a big part of an economy. So every time I see these dudes talking about growing the economy, mm-hmm. I'm like, all the things that grow the economy don't work.
Yes.
The internet is slow and expensive. The electricity doesn't work, so I can't function.
Mobility is everything.
Mobility, because all an economy is moving goods and people and human beings. So if you can't, if a kid is in Katlehong, can't get to Soweto at 9 o'clock in the evening efficiently, what are we talking about? If the Gautrain doesn't connect Soweto to Pretoria, then what are we talking? Like,
yes.
You understand what I'm saying? What if it doesn't connect Soweto to the airport?
Yeah.
What you know what I mean? What are we talking there? What are we discussing? So transportation is the ability to move efficiently is top of the agenda.
Absolutely.
Even like when Minister Fikile Mbalula was Minister of Transport and he was talking about Uber, and he is saying that, oh, now Uber has given people, even celebrities who are doing bad, some dignity because now they can get into a car. I remember that comment and going, oh man, and you the guy in charge of our transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So like all these dudes have a very like warped idea of what it means.
Also, isn't it problematic that we've almost made owning a car a priority when in a lot of economies, people are not in a hurry to buy a car because the train works, the bus works.
Yeah.
I don't need a car.
Yeah.
And the 3, 4, 5,000 rand a month I could be spending on a car, I'm spending 2 grand on transport the whole month.
Yes.
So I'm actually making 3 grand.
Yes.
I don't own a car.
You know what's so crazy? When I was young in Cape Town, like, because the trains used to work, we used to go to Khayelitsha, hang out like for the day, and then the next like at 3 o'clock, by 5 p.m. we were in Kalk Bay or something.
Yes.
So we had like this very vast experience of the city. Like if you ever go, like people who go to Cape Town with me and hang out with me in Cape Town, they experience a totally different Cape Town to Camps Bay and town and whatever, because Cape Town is quite vast.
Sure.
And because when I was young, I had the transportation to move around. And I live there. I have a very like vast, but now kids are in Ubers. We used to take a bus. We used to party. Ready D used to throw these parties at the Jam or just off Roland Street. And we used to take a bus at 11, me and my friends. Like 10:30, and the bus would pick all of us up. And you know what I mean? There were no cell phones. You'll be all catching the last bus.
You networked.
Yeah. And then you get there, by the time you get to the party, there's like a whole bunch of, you know what I mean? Yeah. Boys and girls, teenagers.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
And so I always go, ah, man, kids don't have that.
Yeah.
I don't even think maybe it's a safety issue, but it's also like a infrastructure issue.
Now, speaking of kids, I mean, you started your comedy career as a kid.
Yes.
You're about to turn 40 and you were at Metro FM this week with Sabi.
Yeah.
And your first interview at Metro, you were probably 20, 21. So 20 years ago, you were at Metro with Glenn Lewis. This week, you were on Metro with Sabi.
Yeah.
How much of a mind fuck is it that comedy has sustained you for so long?
I think, you know what's crazy about stand-up is that I really like it. Like, if you watch the way I construct jokes, I really love the idea of telling jokes, and I apply myself, and I've always applied myself. And there's a lot of things that have happened in my life, and just in my career, about how I move and my trajectory. But I've always done stand-up, and so for me, that level of consistency with stand-up will always reward you, especially if you're good at it. People will be, and it happens all the time.
Yeah.
So a person would start off with stand-up and become a massive movie star.
Sure.
and then they just never, and then they, like stand-up becomes a side gig.
Mm.
And then you go, oh no, that's, you're not going to sustain, like, because the movie thing, when that movie thing is gone, and it's happened, some of the biggest movies, even in South Africa, guys who start off doing stand-up, people who start off doing stand-up and they just, I'm not saying people shouldn't do other things. Yep. I'm just saying that
but
the thing that will really reward you is the thing that people really know you for.
Yes.
That's my personal philosophy and that's my personal experience. So when I'm there, I go, I came here telling Glenn how I started doing jokes and now it's like 20 years later and I'm like, oh no, I still do jokes. So it's you know, so it's that's what it is. I don't really go with the flow of waves and I just do what I want to do consistently. I just try to, like, you know, produce stand-up all the time. I'm obsessed with stand-up. That's the thing. I'm really, really, really obsessed with stand-up.
You have a brand new show. I went on Monday.
Yes. Thank you for coming.
I laughed. I laughed very hard.
Thank you.
I laughed very hard. You talk about, I'm about to turn 40.
Yeah.
What about 40? Are you looking forward to or are you not looking forward to? Let me tell you why I'm asking the question.
Okay.
Because you're giving me vibes of the uncle who's turning 60 and doesn't care anymore, but you're doing it at 40.
Because you have to prepare yourself, right? Because there's so much, like the world is changing so much and it's happening through popular culture. And that's the idea of the show.
Yeah.
Like I'm this dude who's 40 years old and the culture, which is popular, is run by people in their 20s. So there's a big disconnect and you're trying to connect because you don't want to get left behind. Even if you're a doctor who's been practicing since the 60s, you got to keep up with the technology. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that. So for me, it's not scary, but I'm enjoying the mishaps that I'm experiencing. Where I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's a gender. Okay, cool. Let's go. You know what I mean? I you know, all those things. I'm navigating stuff that is ever changing. Like now we're talking about how AI just made a song.
Yes.
How crazy is that? And everyone is navigating that, but a person who's like, okay, think about it this way. Sorry. Yeah. Think about it this way. When I was younger, I'm gonna speak for myself.
Yeah.
The internet was a thing, right? So the internet was outside of life.
Yeah.
And so you'd go, I'm gonna go experience the internet. Right, like for me to get directions to Gambia, I needed the internet.
Yes,
you need the internet pretty much for everything, right? But a person who's born like maybe 20 years ago, the internet is everything to them.
Yes,
so those are two different worlds. A person who sees the internet as a thing, and a person who sees the internet as everything. Those brains operate very differently. So I'm a person who sees the internet as a thing, engaging with people who experience the internet as everything.
Yes.
Music, directions, advice on finances, it's all online. So it's a crazy thing for me.
So one of the big stories this week, obviously, is the AI, the Drake Future AI tune.
Right.
Which Spotify and Apple have since pulled.
Right.
If I was to AI Loiso comedy,
right,
would you want it pulled or would you rather we keep it up there but you make the money?
I think likeness is a specifically music legal thing, right? Like I don't think it applies even now. Even if you took my voice and jokes, I don't have legal grounds. You'd be probably condemned by the internet, but you do have the legal grounds to do it, right? So it's a tricky one for me. I don't know. But I do think that it's interesting. Listen, Spotify has no foot to... Spotify has literally dug into the pockets of artists.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah, so I don't really, you know, jump on the side of Spotify. They're getting sued. They're going to pay. They just got, I think this rap group, I think it's the Arsonist. They just got sued and Spotify just lost this case. And the case is about they gave record companies, I don't know, was it 5% of Spotify?
Yeah.
To pay, you know what I mean? Like, I forgot the particulars of the case, but it's like something like scandalous. So it's like, yo, dude, you can't do that. So they've just lost the case and they owe like the artists, the record labels and Spotify owe people like billions of dollars. You know what I'm saying? So for me, Spotify can go jump as an idea.
Speaking music, Black Thought dropped a new album this week. I know you're a fan.
I'm a fan, yeah. You're my big fan.
Your thoughts?
Oh, man, it's so crazy. I've heard the album in passing, but I haven't really sat down and listened. It's been a busy week because I've been doing the show as well.
Yes.
So I haven't had the time to, like, sit back and actually, like, consume it. But he's been dropping an album every year for the last 4 years, and I think this is could be the best one. So I don't want to say that out loud until I've heard it properly. That's first draft of my opinion on the album now.
Okay, so we'll get a proper review once you've heard the album.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the big stories, DeLille axes dysfunctional SA Tourism Board. The board, which was legally compelled to hold 4 meetings a year, met 37 times from the 1st of April 2022 to the 2nd of March 2023 at a cost of 2.7 million rand, according to Khumalo. A total of 11 board meetings were held from the 1st of September 2022 to the 27th of October 2022, while another 10 were held during January and February this year. It must be nice, though. Because, I mean, a board meeting, like they're saying, you're supposed to meet every quarter. But these guys are meeting and you get paid for every board meeting.
Listen, I'll tell you this. Most meetings should last 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Most meetings, 7 minutes is too long even.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you want?
Yes.
Stop asking me about my kids. My kids don't care. You know, don't make small talk. Get to it. You know what I'm saying? What are we... Cool. And for me... in the time of Zoom, I don't know why board meetings are this frequent with these guys.
You know, because you get paid for every board meeting. It becomes a source of income. And, okay. and a reason to walk away from your other job just for the day. And to discuss a billion rand for Tottenham Hotspur or not.
Tottenham Hotspurs are in total shambles. And listen, they would have gotten their value out of Tottenham. But I don't know. I got to... Yeah, listen, and Patricia, just break that thing up. Fire everybody. Fire the tea lady as well. Why are you serving tea to these people? No, I don't know. Fire everyone. I don't care. I actually don't care. I do think, though, we have no business inviting people to South Africa and calling it a world-class country with potholes bigger than the size of the Kimberley Hole.
And then you can't even cycle, you know.
Yeah,
you're trying to save the planet and grow your legs. Clear.
I'm not trying to save the planet. Let's not. I don't care about the planet. Like, I genuinely don't care about the planet.
Yeah.
I'm like, my contribution to saving the planet has to start with the guys who are doing the most, like the petroleum companies and the oil companies. Then we can start talking about involving me.
So until they give a damn.
Yeah, no. You can't involve me when there's people doing other crazy things. Mm. Why am I involved? Leave me out of this.
So actress Jennifer Aniston says she wishes we could laugh more at ourselves rather than having to police every word in comedies. In fact, she says comedy is suffering because everybody's sensitive now.
No, comedy is not suffering. I think it's a gross exaggeration. I think people...
Is it... posting what you feel that is suffering versus comedy suffering?
Listen, first of all, you allow to think crazy things. You're allowed to think crazy shit.
Yeah.
Just keep it in your WhatsApp group.
Sure.
Like, there's no need for you to tell us on Twitter your crazy fucking ideas. I don't understand this oversharing of... I have WhatsApp groups where I say crazy shit.
In fact, there are people I'm sure you want to kill even, but you don't want to say it in public.
Why would you... I just don't understand this idea of wanting to publish every thought.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, so for me, the crazy idea thing, the thing about stand-up, it has no qualifications.
Sure.
There's no, you don't go through a program or this or go a degree.
It's personal.
No. The entry point is so low.
Mm.
So it's not, you can't.
Oh, so it's like podcasting. Comedy and podcasting, anyone can do it.
Yeah, anyone can do it. Yeah. So the problem is, so it's hard to police that kind of thing, right? So what's going to happen is I can't say that I can't say that comedians should be able to say anything they want to say, because anybody could be a comedian. It doesn't require special skills or qualifications. You know what I mean? So you can wake up tomorrow and say, I'm a comedian, therefore I'm allowed to say. So it's a reasonable idea of wanting to police shit, because people get too fucking just say whatever the fuck they want to say on stage. Then we should have another layer of a conversation of like, okay, cool, should human beings generally just be allowed to say whatever the fuck they want to say, you know? But I don't think comedy is a tech. I think people who care about comedy apply themselves in thinking about what they're going to say, and that, you know, and things are fine.
And people go to these shows knowing exactly what to expect. You know, I'm going to a comedy show expecting, one, that this person is going to speak their mind.
Yes.
And two, I'm not some proxy that's going to take offense on behalf of whatever group even.
Yes, but also this idea that, like someone tweeted yesterday, I had to be like, yo, man, the world is not designed to just mollycoddle you. But he is saying he doesn't like going to funerals because they trigger him.
Nobody likes going to fucking funerals. What the fuck are you talking about?
We all dust ourselves and we go pay our respects. It's hard. It's like...
And who was Barry Uncle if you're not going to go?
You know what I mean? Like, so people have had this idea that life is soft and life is... And people are like, yo, this soft life shit. And it's like the worst ideology ever, because life happens and life can go either way.
Dude, we used to drink stuff laced with MSG and we're still fine.
Dog, we used to drink asbestos.
Dude, what are you talking about?
Dude, living in an asbestos house and you were still fine. You know what I'm saying? And people won't tell us about recycling. What is more recycling than having a handkerchief? You used to blow your nose and put the shit back in your pocket, yes, and then use it again.
Yeah.
Tell me about recycling. We've been on this shit. So, yeah, I don't know.
In your new show, you talk about Gen Zs and how everybody's sensitive, how everyone is always triggered, how everyone talks about my mental health this, mental health that.
Yes.
Tell us more about that.
Well, like I'm saying, I'm navigating it as opposed to being opposed to it.
Yes.
Right? So I'm like, hi, what?
You're learning to live with it.
I'm learning, because that's, you know, I think
that's where we are right now.
Right. That's where we are, and this is how the world's moving, and all these corporations are kind of... There's a big debate happening, and I haven't chosen a side on the debate. I'm taking all arguments.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, what are you guys saying? I don't know what the final conclusion. I don't know how I'm going to conclude this whole engagement, but I know that I'm listening to everyone, and I'm hearing all sides of the story.
All right. Sound like a politician, but okay.
I am, though, but I really am. That's how I think. It's like even if someone is a murderer, and I'm always sympathetic, right? I'm like, there's something that happened to this person and they were unable to deal with it that leads us to this point. It doesn't matter who it is.
There's a side to every story.
Yeah, and so like sometimes I might not hear the story, but I know there is a story, and the story is 9 out of 10 times the dark one, and I'm sympathetic towards that. And it's hard to explain to someone why I'd be sympathetic to a person who's murdered.
I often argue that we are so quick to want to silence people such that there's only one view that prevails, versus every view should be allowed a space in the sun so that we can all make up our minds. And,
right.
often we're quick to say, no, Loiso must be silenced for whatever reason. But what if what Loiso thinks is what 7 billion other people think? But we want to silence him because it makes me triggered.
I try to not speak on those things on the internet. Like, because they, you know, like now I'm going, you know what I mean? I have a WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
I discuss this thing in a WhatsApp group.
How do I get into this WhatsApp group?
No. I have multiple WhatsApp groups. And so the thing about it is like, I don't have to publish every thought of mine.
Yeah.
And so I have thoughts on that issue, and I'm like, I'm not going to engage that issue because I will be bullied.
Yeah.
And then I won't, you know.
You have been bullied on social media before.
Yeah. But I also take accountability for that, because I had a very, like, aggressive energy on the internet. And so my energy was, so people were trying to match my energy.
Yeah.
And as soon as I gave it 2 years, I was like, I'm going to really like sort of cleanse my energy on the internet, and my energy on the internet has changed.
Do you miss old Twitter Loiso?
No, I don't, because I get like those kind of chats and talk and that abrasiveness were also like smothered with insecurities.
Yeah.
And so you have this platform to show macho-ness and gusto, mm-hmm. but, you know, deep inside, you're like, oh, I'm insecure about a particular thing.
Yes.
And now I'm projecting it. But then I don't experience it on my lonesome. I'm publishing it.
Mm.
So, which is like, nah, I don't miss that.
What have you made peace with about yourself, given that maybe younger Luiso had insecurities?
What have I made peace with?
Also with 40 around the corner and realizing that, geez, I'm almost at the end of my tether.
You know, I'm very far from the end of my tether.
dude, they call 40, 50 midlife. No, it's not midlife. Midlife is probably like 20, 30.
40 is...
We're getting to the end, my man.
No, I think I've got like another 30 years in me.
Yeah.
Which I'm probably going to use. I haven't thought of that. I haven't thought of what what have I learned to live with? I have learned to live with not being understood sometimes.
Mm.
It's like, okay, it doesn't matter. Like, I was so obsessed with being understood.
Mm.
Now I'm like, I don't give a shit if you don't understand. And
did you
not even aggressively, just like, man.
Did you often find that you had to overcompensate or over-explain yourself because you wanted to be understood?
Of course.
Versus you must fit in or fuck off.
Well, now I just, you know, I say what I say and I don't allow rebuttals or whatever. I'm like, oh, this is how I think or view things. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to debate it with a stranger. I've got a WhatsApp group. Yeah. Got a WhatsApp group and we engage. We engage thoroughly. Why am I talking to you? A dude. Got to Joburg last week. You from Hammanskraal. We have two different experiences. I don't want to hear your experience. I don't care. Leave me alone. I've got friends.
And you viewing my life through your lens of experience.
Yeah.
Obviously, there will be a disconnect or a broken telephone.
Right. So why are we chatting? Leave me alone. So I've also assumed that position. Why am I talking to you? It's a very smug point of view, but I like it.
And when you're about 40, you're allowed to
get to that. I'm allowed to be smug.
Now, one of the things you mentioned in your new show is about how, you know, if you got a rant for every time someone spoke about your height, you'd make a ton of money.
It's crazy. Like, what was the running joke when I walked into the studio? Everyone was commenting about my height. And I'm like, think of me as a hot girl.
Yeah.
I know, nigga.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, hot, like, I know.
I live up here.
You gotta tell me that shit on every fuck. Day, whether I'm with the lizard, you know, oh my god,
he even knows how to say it in Setswana,
you know what I mean? I'm just like, yo, fuck, bro, shut the fuck up. No one wants to hear this shit.
Moses Gibson is a 41 year old dude, and he wanted to make himself taller. He went to a spiritual healer that failed, and now he spent about 3 million rand lengthening his legs. What would you fix if budget was not a problem?
I don't know. I think like all the things that, like when I was young, like I still break out, and it's weird because I'm an adult, you know.
Yeah.
But since I've broken out, like my skin breaks out, and it breaks out like very sporadically. And when I was in my 20s and when I was a teenager, it really used to bug me. And the crazy thing about it is that clinical research shows that a lot of teenagers, they go through body dysmorphia and very hectic insecurities about themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you talk to anybody, they'll tell you there was a phase in their lives. And so that's why, you know, now people are realizing it's bit dangerous to really transition everyone who feels a bit uncomfortable about their body.
It could be a moment.
It's not necessarily, but now people have been given an option and a channel instead of just being like, oh, no, this is, so I used to feel very uncomfortable about my body as a teenager, but then I was always constantly breaking up. But then when I got like in my 30s, I was like, oh, this doesn't stop my life.
Yes.
Like this thing doesn't...
I'm here.
I do most of the shit that I want to do, and it really doesn't really prohibit... it's not prohibitive.
like me, were you that kid that couldn't wait to grow into the head?
Oh, definitely. Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, shit. People don't know that struggle. It's crazy.
People don't understand on some, when am I going to
grow into this head?
Into this head.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's not heavy, but
I just get teased about that. You see what I mean? Like, it's, and then the kids are also mean. They're insensitive to that. To that issue. And, Oh, that one is but I grew into my head thoroughly. I think I must have been 20.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was just like this lanky.
You know, a lollipop.
Yeah.
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 One thing you did this week, you went to the movies. What did you watch?
I watched Creed. It was great.
Yeah.
I haven't actually watched Rocky in a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the.
You haven't seen the original Rocky?
I did, but it was a long time ago.
Okay.
A very long time ago. I think I was even in primary school or some shit when I saw that. So I actually need to. I didn't watch Apollo Creed, so I just jumped into this one. It was great. If you're looking for something to watch this weekend, go watch that. I liked it. It was gritty, and it was I don't know. You know, like I don't rap music is not the same way. Movies, I just go, I enjoyed it or didn't enjoy it.
Okay, so basically it's an escape, and then when the movie's over, you're done, you're moving on.
Yeah, because I went to watch the movie with Akino Motoso and Kagiso Medir.
Young name drop, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those are my friends. What am I going to do? So we went to go watch the movie, and they were dissecting it and talking about it. And I just went,
because they're movie directors.
They're both movie makers. Yes. And so it's interesting sometimes to hear the things that they see. I'm like, oh, I didn't even see that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I saw one of the camera shot. Like,
but here's the interesting, I've started developing things like TV ideas that are in the process of being pitched and I realize that I just think of something and I go, as opposed to I don't have these where someone's like, oh, who's your protagonist? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, yes.
You do what I mean?
So your ideas are not from a movie maker.
They're not, no. So they vary like these crazy things, and then the people ask you these questions and you go, I don't know what that is.
Yes.
All I know is that this person's going to kill this person.
So there's the tension.
Yeah, and I'm like,
there's the conflict. You're like, I just want to make a movie, guys.
Right. Yes. And so you need those things.
Yes.
But I don't want to start creating from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And it's also like when I do stand-up, I go, do I find this thing good first? Mm-hmm. Is this an interesting idea?
Sure.
And then I kind of, I kind of work backwards almost.
Brand new show, where do we find you, Loiso?
Theater on the Square, tickets on Quicket. I run the show every day until the 29th, the 29th of April.
Mm.
So we're on tonight, we're on the whole weekend, and then next week until Saturday.
What should we not expect from your brand new show?
Not expect?
Yeah.
My previous show was a story that went from beginning to end.
Yeah.
This one is less that, and it's more, there's a consistent theme.
Yeah.
And the consistent theme is popular culture, but it's not like as blatant. It's not, how do I explain it? It's the themes pop up.
Mm.
And if you, because what I realize is that sometimes I've tried to push my feeling of a show onto the audience, and I don't think that's a good idea.
Sure.
I like to, now what I do is I talk about things that pertain to the theme of the show, and people pick up what they want from it, instead of me sort of like, not spoon feeding, but projecting how they should receive it. So don't expect a story, don't expect a reoccurring theme, and tons of laughter. I think what I'm happy about the most is that all the bits...
People are laughing.
Yeah. All the bits work from beginning to end. So when I walk on stage until I leave, all the bits where I'm expecting a laugh are there. And so for me, that's a big plus.
Loiso Gola, brand new show, Theatre on the Square. Tickets available at Quicket. Go check it out. If you need a good laugh, you need to escape. You need to think a little, because this man gets you thinking also.
Oh.
Loiso Gola is leaving the building.
This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. This kid...
Yeah!
Really kicks.
She does kick ass. She started modeling as a teenager, has worked with major beauty brands, and has over 2 million followers on Instagram alone. Let's not even talk YouTube. And that's all been done in under 3 decades. What are you doing with your life? Please give a warm welcome to Mihlali Ndamase. But listen, because she's also going to be making my face up, we're going to actually move this interview to our makeup room because we want to get cozy. Really cozy.
This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. This kid...
Yeah!
Really kicks.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week, hashtag This Kid Really Kicks Ass. This is where we speak to young Africans that we feel kick ass and should inspire you if they don't inspire you already. She is possibly the ambassador for Kokstad to the rest of the world. Please welcome Mihlali Ndamase.
Hello.
Hello, you. How are you doing?
I'm good.
When I first met and interviewed you, you were probably 22, 23.
Yes.
You came to Metro FM and your star was rising. Little did we know that you'd be the star you are now. Yes. Tell us about the past 4 years, 5 years. What has transformed in terms of the woman you're becoming and the star you're becoming?
A lot has changed.
Yeah.
I think generally my career has grown significantly. I first started off filming tutorials in my bedroom and spending a lot of time working at home.
Yeah.
And now I spend a lot of time on the road as well, traveling for gigs, making appearances, collaborating with brands. And yeah, so a lot has changed. And I'm also just growing. I'm trying to grow more into the entrepreneurship space. I want to work myself and create something that's going to live beyond me.
Sure.
So that's pretty much what's changed.
When last were you in Kokstad?
I was last there in December.
Okay.
Yeah, Jan actually.
So you are appointed, just for the day, a Minister of Tourism in Kokstad. Where do you take me?
The McDonald's front. Okay, no, I'm joking. There's a golf club for enjoy golfing.
Okay.
We can go to the museum, Adam Koch Museum. We can hike a mountain. There's a mountain. What else can we do?
Okay, so we've spent... Okay, so...
It's not much.
So 3 hours done. What do I do the rest of the day in Kokstad?
Or sleep, one eats and relax and enjoy the peace.
Yes. Now, but you were shipped off to boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
How did that feel? Let me tell you why I'm asking you that. Because I was shipped off to boarding school when I was 12. And I almost felt like I was being thrown away. Like, I'm a child. Why are you sending me away to live with other smelly boys that I don't even know? How did you feel being shipped off to boarding school?
I didn't mind at all. I think I was genuinely a very independent child growing up. Like, I loved the idea of growing and being grown, you know,
yes.
and being able to make decisions for myself. So I was very excited. I went to all-girls school, which was quite an experience.
Mm.
So I really wasn't anxious. I only cried on the last day of school, though, when I realized that, oh, I'm leaving.
You know? Yeah.
But when I got there, I was absolutely fine.
As you were crying, what's the one thing you were thinking, I want to miss this the most?
Just... the being familiar with people, you know, like meeting new people makes me very anxious. I'm not the biggest social butterfly. I keep to myself a lot. I only warm up to people once I know them.
Yeah.
So the idea of making new friends in a new environment was kind of scary.
Would you send your daughter to boarding school?
100%. I feel like it's very necessary.
And the benefits of going to an all-girls school, because many argue that people that go to all-boys schools or girls schools often... and learn how to socialize with the opposite sex. Would you say going to a girl's school affected how you relate to the opposite sex?
No, that's not 100% true because there's sports festival thing.
And you have a brother school also.
There's a brother school. Yeah. We used to have chapel. Every Sunday we'd have chapel with our brother school, which was St. Charles. So
were you allowed to hug? Or did you hug and make space for Jesus?
No, we couldn't hug. But I mean, the teachers would stand around and watch how we interact with the boys. But I understand how it affects some girls. I don't even think it makes them socially awkward. I think it just makes some people really crave being around the opposite sex. Because there were girls in my boarding who snuck boys into the boarding
house. You are kidding.
I promise.
And you were never one of them?
No, I wasn't. I really was not that excited by men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you're 14 and obviously you are pretty, you look good, you're easy on the eye. Mm-hmm. Then you start modeling. How did that happen?
So a lot of people from a very young age, people would say to my mom and to my aunts that this child needs to model. She has so much personality. She's so beautiful. So when I went to...
Were you self-aware or when did you become self-aware that... You looked in the mirror and you're like, oh, okay, you don't look too bad, girl.
I was very insecure, actually, in high school. I didn't see the beauty that other people saw, but I was very confident in what I do. So I'm the kind of person who likes to perfect whatever it is that I'm doing.
Mm.
So the modeling competitions, I used to ace that. I won, I think, about 3 awards.
Jeez, okay.
So
you're Miss what?
No, they'd have like the best model, best walk, best pose, things like that.
Mm.
So, I made sure that I was very good at that. But in terms of just feeling like, oh, you're so beautiful, I don't recall feeling that much in high school.
First guy to convince you that maybe let me give him a chance. Do you remember how old you were?
Mom, if you're watching this.
Mom, I promise it was just a kiss.
How old was I? I was in... Oh my God, and I got so heartbroken. I was in grade 8.
Yeah.
No, I was in grade 9.
Okay.
I was in grade 9.
Was he from your brother's school?
No, it wasn't my brother's school. I met him. There was this Peter Marisburg College. Mm-hmm. You know, those boys are dangerous. Stay away from them. I met him at a rugby game.
Okay.
No, actually, it was like a whole sports tournament, and he was captain of the basketball team.
Ah, so you went for the top jock.
Of course. I always won the best.
So how did you break your heart?
Oh, he cheated on me with a girl in matric at my school.
But did you understand that she's older and possibly more experienced?
I did understand, and I obviously couldn't give him what I want.
What he wanted,
at that age. So, I mean, at the time, I didn't understand, but looking back, I'm actually like, you know what, you saved me. Rather that than... you know, being coerced or whatever.
What do you say to young girls under pressure to give it up?
Don't.
And increasingly we're finding out that, you know, girls are falling pregnant even at the age of 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
So what do you say to a girl who's under pressure to give it up?
Firstly, that's rape. It's coercion. Mm. Do not do that. I feel like if you're going to give away that part of yourself, you need to be ready. You never ever want to look back and regret the experience. It needs to feel right at the time. Nobody should ever put you under pressure. And if anyone is, then just walk away. It's not worth it.
You know, it's wild. It's actually wild. Last week was the 35th anniversary of my first time with my girlfriend. It was both our first times.
Really?
And we were both in grade 10. And I was thinking about it the other day, like...
Oh my gosh, that's young.
I know, we were 15. And I look back, it's like, what were we doing? Like, what were we doing?
But boys always lose their virginity very early.
No. I know boys that waited. Yeah. That waited and they don't regret waiting, you know? But anyway, so you finished school, but obviously you're doing the modeling and everything else. Mm-hmm. When do you earn your first paycheck and how much was it?
I earned my first paycheck in 2016 after I started a YouTube channel. So I collaborated with a beauty powerhouse or company that was bringing down a makeup brand from the States.
Okay.
So they wanted me to be the lead makeup artist for the brand. And my first paycheck was 7,000 rand.
How old were you?
How old was I in 2016? I think I was in 20 or 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you blow it?
Yo, I don't even remember. I really don't remember.
Yeah. So why here now with your career? You're in an elevator, 5-year-old girl. Michali, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living?
I'm in digital marketing. I'm an influencer.
I'm 5 years old, remember?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
5 years old. Okay. Jeez. I connect people to brands.
Okay.
I advertise brands for people online. On social media, I'm sure 5-year-olds know what that is. Yeah.
Because a lot of people, unfortunately, think because they look good and they're successful, it has to do with their looks and nothing else. And you get that a lot.
Yeah,
a lot of you get that a lot. And a lot of you also have to deal with, there's no way she's this successful without a man involved.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you navigate those murky waters?
You know what? I like to let my work speak for itself because the reality is anybody who is aware of how the marketing space works and knows that there's admin involved, there's brand managers involved, there's clients involved, there's agency involved.
Sure.
I mean, yes, you can gain an audience online by being beautiful, but you can't build and maintain a successful brand just from your looks.
With zero talent.
You have a brain, you have to have talent.
Yeah.
You need to have a team that represents you. So I think people also just do that to try. They have like this obsession with humbling beautiful women online. So they really just do that to discredit and try humble me. And I don't, it doesn't get to me, it's fine. I know.
I first interviewed you about 5 years ago. I think you were 22-ish.
Yeah, 21, 22.
Yeah, you're 21, 22 when I interviewed you. And one of the reasons we interviewed you is because we saw your traction already on social media. We saw your traction already on YouTube. You know, you're one of the first South Africans to monetize on YouTube. And unfortunately, your average person does not understand that you can make a ton of money on YouTube alone.
Like not a ton.
Well, not a ton, but enough to sustain having... You know, your own lifestyle.
Yes, 100%. You can pay your rent with YouTube money.
Yeah.
And have change.
So what do we say to those people that keep saying, yeah, no, there's no way she's...
No way.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, do people think that when there's paid partnership on Instagram, I'm just lying and I'm doing for fun?
You know what I mean? And you're working with big... I mean, don't you have a partnership right now with one of the big makeup brands?
I do. So I work with quite a few brands, but I don't have... a long-term partnership at the moment. So a lot of clients just give you work and then they renew contracts as we go. Yeah, I have clients that I work with. I work with quite a few brands. I have Beauty and the Beat masterclasses. I have Malachite, which is a beauty specialist platform. And I have YouTube. So yeah, I do work.
So I've never monetized my social media. I am young. I am driven. Where do I start?
It's important to sort of identify your niche on social media, see where you want to position yourself, the kind of audience that you want to relate to your brand.
Okay.
And you have to start off by creating content. Just like any other job, you need some sort of profile, some sort of CV, and that's going to be online for you, showing your work, buying the brands that you want to work with. You have to start like that and tag them until...
Yeah, fake it until you make it.
To them. Yes. Like if how I got my first brand deal, I had to film a review for that brand. They weren't paying me.
Sure.
And they were like, oh, we just came across your video. I was like, oh, finally.
Somebody saw.
So you really have to put yourself out there. Collaboration is also very important, and not a lot of people speak about that. Reach out to people. Don't be afraid. Hit up. There's so many other content creators in the country. You don't have to go for the people with like 5 million followers and then be discouraged if they're not available. But collaborate with anyone, even if they have 10,000 followers, because you, at the end of the day, you're going to be tapping into a new market and exposing yourself to a new audience.
How important is the consistency? Because a lot of people come onto social media, they see that, oh, it's only 5 comments and... Next week, it's only 2 comments. Next week, there's no comment. The following week might be 50 comments. But a lot of people eventually almost taper it down and then stop. What kept you going?
What kept me going is the fact that I wanted money. But also, even outside of money, the passion for what I do. I really love my job. I love the beauty space. And I also had to prove to myself, not only to myself, but all the people who doubted me when I started, that I can do this and I'm going to be good at this and I'm going to be successful at this. So that's what kept me going. And consistency is very, very important. I mean, it's a very fast-paced growing industry. It's becoming saturated. Not to say that there's not enough space for people. There's a huge pie we can all eat. But if you're consistent, you grasp your audience's attention and you also retain it. So you need to constantly be uploading. I mean, how often when you open Instagram and you refresh this new post?
Yes.
So if you're just posting today and then you go MIA for 3 weeks, people are going to forget about you. You're not going to be at the top of the feed. You know, the algorithm also comes into play. So it's important that you are consistent.
So like they say, you keep at it until something happens.
Yes, 100%. You just got to keep pushing.
Ever wanted to give up? Ever wanted 100%. To prove them right that you're going to fail?
I wanted to give up when I felt like I don't have privacy anymore.
Oh yes, there's also that part.
For me, that was very overwhelming. That's the one thing I don't like about my job. There's no privacy at all.
When was that moment that you realized that, oh shit, my privacy is out the window? Was there a moment?
I think just things like, for example, trying to keep a relationship private and now it's on social media. Going to the mall, sometimes you just want to go to the mall looking like, excuse my language, a bum, and just get toiletries.
But bums are nice, though.
But, okay, valid. But you know what I mean? You just want to go to the mall just looking jay or whatever.
Yes.
And then someone will be like, oh, hi, Miss Sally. Or you catch someone doing this, like trying to sneak in a video, and it's just like, oh my God, leave me alone.
There goes my privacy.
So yeah, things like that.
If you were anonymous, what's the one thing you'd try and get away with? It could be nice, it could be naughty, it could be innocent. Yeah, if nobody knew you.
Jeez, what would I want to get away with? Oh, wow, a heist.
Oh, okay.
guys, don't judge me, but I mean, don't you find that exciting? I'm obsessed with money heist, by the way. This is where it comes from.
Okay.
I think that this is a bit dark, but there's something about movies about criminals like succeeding that sort of excites me.
Yes.
Obviously, in the real world, crime is not good. Do not do crime. You're going to risk your life. But
there's something about the underdog.
Yes.
There's always something about the underdog.
Yes. So I'm always just like, if I could get away with the heist, you know, and have like a crew of people where we strategize, that would be so exciting. Mm.
You bought Mama a car.
Yes.
Why?
So basically, my mom at the time was going through a rough patch.
Sure.
And you know what? She is a very hardworking woman, very successful businesswoman. But after the recession hit, obviously it impacted a lot of lives.
Mm.
So I just wanted to make her life a little bit easier. She did have a car at the time, but she wasn't satisfied with the car she had. And I remember specifically being home for a holiday and we were at a garage. We stopped to pour gas.
Mm.
And she was like, yo, my child, if ever you want to spoil me, that's my dream car.
Oh, flip, okay.
And I was like, okay, cool, noted.
So you're like...
And yeah, and then there was a time I was driving home from a meeting and I passed the Land Rover dealership, Stash Jaguar. I was like, okay, let me just make a U-turn and go get a quote. You know, I was like, let me just try and see.
What's the worst that could happen?
So I called her and I was like, Mom, Jaguar wants to make me an ambassador. If you were me, what car would you get and what color? And then she's listed the specs, white, this, that. And I was like, oh, guy, take notes.
Yes.
And then, yeah, I just wanted to spoil her.
How did that feel? Because for a lot of especially black kids, you know, you want to build your folks a house, get them a car.
100%.
Give them a life that they possibly deserve, but circumstances denied them.
Yes.
Yeah.
It felt amazing. You know, our parents sacrificed so much for us. And also, I feel like, outside of making myself proud, there's nothing that feels better than making your parents proud.
Mm.
You know, because at the end of the day, every single parent wishes well for their child. So or seeing her dreams for me and me growing into the woman that she probably wanted me to be, I had to do something just to be like, thank you as well for everything that you've done for me, being my biggest support system, trusting me with this crazy decision of going into beauty, being my soundboard, being my protector. So... yeah, it felt really good.
Do you get advice from her about dating and life stuff?
Everything. My mom's my best friend. We talk all... like, if she goes 2 days without talking to me, she'll be like, how to?
What advice has she given you
that
you're like, oh, wow, you know, she's just like my girl right now?
You know what? I love my mom because I never feel judged by her. So even in moments where I know that obviously I'm not making her 100% proud, I can be vulnerable enough to still go to her for advice and be like, ish, mom, I know this is not great, but what can I do about the situation that I'm in, you know? So she's that kind of parent. She literally is like my best friend. And also I think the best advice I've ever gotten from her in general, especially now that I'm getting older, I'm realizing the importance of praying and having some sort of spirituality because it keeps you grounded, you know? So yeah, that's honestly the best advice I've gotten.
Does she have access to social media?
She has.
And how does she feel about how you often get attacked on social media?
She hates it. If my mom could go to each person's house and shoot them, she probably would. Honestly, if she were John Wick, all my trolls would be dead.
So what kind of conversations do you have with her, though, when you're trending for whatever reasons?
I have to calm her down most of the time because she'll always call me and she'll be like, are you okay? And I'll be like, Mom, I'm fine. Because very often I don't read these things and I always tell her, do not read it. Like, I'll see that I'm trending.
So you protect your peace by not going in.
I'd rather not read because now when you read it, as a human being, naturally, we have feelings. You also get irritated and now you want to respond and you give them the satisfaction of knowing that they got to you. So that's why I don't even read it. I'll put my phone away when I'm trending and I'm like, okay, let me make myself hubby or watch a movie or something. And she'll call me frustrated. Did you see what this person said? And I'll be like, Mom, don't read it. Do not. And I even tell people, like even my friends, don't send me anything. I don't want to see it. Don't send me screenshots. Don't tag me in nonsense.
I always say your true friends will know not to send you anything that 100%. Will disturb your peace.
100%.
Because there's nothing that says you're a friend when you send me something on some, look what they're saying about you.
Yeah, no, honestly.
Like, what makes you think I want to see the negative things they're saying about me?
Exactly.
What have you read that did hurt that said I'm not going back there ever again?
Well, not about myself. I just hated when people speak about my family. Like, don't drag my family into it. They have absolutely nothing to do with being in the public eye. They didn't sign up for this. So that's what really rubbed me the wrong way, is when they start talking about my family and sort of like questioning my upbringing. Did you turn up this way because she was raised by this kind of woman? Like, no, I'm grown. I make my own decisions. I have a mind of my own, you know. So, yeah, to see my family out of it, that pisses me off.
We're going to play a game. It's called What Would Mihlali Do?
All right. Yeah. Let's play.
A guy likes you, wants to date you, ticks every box, but is in between jobs. What would Mihlali do?
What do you mean in between jobs?
He's unemployed. What would Mihlali do? He ticks every box, but he's in between jobs and he looks inspired and driven.
Okay, how old are we?
He is 35.
Ah, I'm gay. Okay. I don't know, because I've dated someone who wasn't working, but he had just graduated.
And how did that turn out?
I mean, it didn't last because he wasn't a good person. It wasn't about him not working, you know, because, I mean, I didn't expect him to look after me. So that was fine. I don't know. I think it depends what phase I'm at in life. I don't know. I'm not keen on. You know what the problem is with unemployed men? Their egos are very fragile. Especially when you are a working woman, he's going to be insecure. Now we're going to be fighting about, oh, my video editor is a man and he's at my house till 10 p.m. because he has to edit a YouTube video. Things like that. And I'm not in the, I don't have time to be managing ego a week. So no, I wouldn't.
What if he ticks the box that says he's still confident, doesn't have a fragile ego? How important is it in helping a partner?
Yes.
Not only manage expectations, but also feel secure, because you're in an industry where you will deal with a lot of men.
Yes.
How important is it in keeping your partner, you know, in a peace of mind state of mind?
It's very important, and I definitely try my best to play my part, and I will. I think I'm a great communicator in a relationship.
Sure.
And I'm a very loyal person, and it's something that's easy to see when you're with me. That's only so much that you can do, you know. If someone still doubts you after that, then it's never going to work, you know. So, yeah, I try my best.
What would Mihlali do? It's 2024, it's election time. 18-year-old young lady says, Mihlali, Mihlali, I look up to you. Which party should I vote for? What would Mihlali do?
What are these questions? What are these questions? I would say don't vote.
Why? Why?
I don't want to answer these questions.
You don't like this game anymore.
I'm going to be like, how would you do? Like, you know, drink water or coke.
So give them three options. Or not. You know.
Jeez, I don't know.
Or would you say let's have a drink and talk about it?
2022.
2024, next year.
2024. Let's do our research and, you know, compare the pros and cons of voting for each party, and then you'll make a decision from there, because you're your own human being and we are free.
What would Mihlali do? There's an item in a store that you see, but you can tell that this price tag is wrong. This should be three times what the price tag says. What does Mihlali do? Does she buy it anyway, or does she say to them, but guys, you mispriced this?
I would ask if they're sure about the price. Yeah, I would ask.
So you wouldn't see it as a...
a steal?
Yeah.
No.
You score.
I'm not, guys. I can't do that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What would Mihlali do? A gossip columnist parks their car and runs off to buy something quickly. And then a tow car comes to tow the car because it's parked illegally. What would Mihlali do?
Is it a negative gossip?
And gossip is gossip.
I would allow them to tow the car. I'd probably even take a video to post it on my stories.
So are you a vengeful person?
I'm not a vengeful person, but I mean, karma is every address. So if you're out there talking negative about people, your day's coming.
Okay, so if karma is visiting you on some, yeah, that's the door. That's the door.
Yeah, I'll even give them directions. Turn left, go straight. 2 minutes ahead, park.
What would Mihlali do? Mm-hmm. A guy ticks all the boxes, but he's 10 years older.
Date him.
Uh-huh. Mm. He's 10 years younger. Mm-mm. Or 5 years younger.
No.
2 years younger.
Yeah, I could date that. No.
What is it about dating outside the age bracket that appeals to you?
Like older?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just prefer older men. I'm not saying too old, but generally I just prefer an older partner. I've never dated a younger guy, but I've definitely have dated someone my age. Also, my age, I'm currently 26. If I'm dating someone 10 years younger...
That's why I said five.
I'm going to get arrested.
That's why I moved it to five very fast.
You know, I think when you are older, if I was in my 30s, it's easier to date someone who is 5 years younger because you're still in the same phase of life.
Yes.
At this age, I'm dating a 21-year-old, you know. I'm going to be driving to work. He's going to campus.
He's telling you what the autos is finished. You know? It's like, hey, Mimi, the Oros is finished. Don't forget the Oros.
Yeah, Oros better give me a campaign so my baby can have Oros.
In fact, speaking of Oros, what are some of your childhood pleasures that you have not shed? Like stuff you did as a child or that you ate as a child or drank as a child. What are you still hanging on to?
What am I still hanging on to? I think, okay, geez, let me think.
Is Oros a red flag in a relationship?
No, I love Oros. I believe in Oros.
You've just ticked one of my boxes.
I had Oros before coming here this morning.
I have Oros every single day.
It's amazing.
Hey, Oros, here's your next ambassador.
Hi.
Oros.
What are some of my childhood? I don't know.
Like your childhood guilty pleasures. Like for me, it was Tofolax, for instance. Like I almost had a packet of Tofolax every single day. And that's why I've got fillings everywhere because my teeth literally...
Jeez.
Or like a toffee.
Guys, what was really exciting, every Sunday we'd go to Wimpy after church.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I still love Wimpy.
So you guys were loaded, Mus.
Stop it.
You were like white folk, no, rich. We were celebrating, have chicken and rice. Oh, do Wimpy.
So yeah, that I still love Wimpy.
Yeah.
Mm.
Would you have kids? Do you want to have a family? 100%. Do you want to start a family?
And I really want kids. I will have kids, but not now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can wait. A very long time before having children.
Dude, you've been on a journey already from the age of 14. Mm-hmm. What's next on this journey? Because you keep knocking the ball out the park. You keep knocking the ball. They keep pushing you. You keep saying, I'm not falling. I'm moving. You're almost like a spring that each time they push you, you're just loading up, and then you come back out.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to come
in
terms of what I want to do. I think this year is going to be the year where I'll be launching my own businesses, quite a few of them.
Sure.
So, that's what people can look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
You guys will be wearing and using things that are associated with my brand.
What, thongs for men?
Oh, wow. I can look into that.
I mean, if you want to send me samples, I prefer mine in luminous green. Please.
Okay.
Yes. So Mihlali thongs for men in lumo green. It'll be the fresh edition.
Yeah. We can collaborate on that.
Let's actually collaborate on it.
Oh, my word.
Fresh and Mimi.
You are literally putting a picture of yourself in people's mind with a thong on.
You know that myself and Fat Joe did a strip show for our listeners at YFM? And we were in luminous green thongs.
How was the views? I'm sure they were crazy.
One, there was no social media, thank God. But the club was packed. It was actually quite a show.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know if I'd ever get into a green thong again, not in public.
Okay.
Like, not in public. Thank you very much. You bought us a new car the other day.
Yeah.
Why did you go with that car? Why did you go with that car? Mm-hmm. And was it also to shut people the fuck up?
No, it wasn't to shut people up. As we all know, purchasing any car or house or whatever, it's a process.
Sure.
So I started shopping in September last year.
Okay.
So I didn't do it for people. I just wanted a new car and I was due for a new car. Mm-hmm. Why did I go for that car? I'm obsessed with Mercedes. I'm a firm believer of the brand.
No, they make dope cars.
Your comfortable drive. Yes. Very innovative. I love their brand.
In fact, most people that, you know, growing up had Wimpy on Sundays drive Mercs.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. And I love the color. Mm-hmm. I wanted an SUV.
Yeah.
So that's why I went with the car.
Space for kids one day.
Hopefully by the time I have kids, I'll be driving a Bentley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you know what you need to come up with? A range of makeup for men. Because increasingly men are taking time to look good.
Yeah. You know, someone's actually suggested that to me before.
You're welcome.
I'll definitely think about it.
Because we're at an age where in other countries, I mean, I look at East Africa, for instance, where a lot of women are becoming millionaires overnight because they're coming up with products and merchandise that allows people to support them. And you've got a massive support base. Like, why are you not monetizing the support base?
100%. But then also, I think a lot of men need to move away from the fear of wearing makeup before I could launch a brand. Because sometimes
you could start it.
And start the movement. Sometimes when you have interviews and you know there's like a male who's in the beauty room, they'll be like, not too much, you know?
Mm. And you could start with me, because if you can fix this face, you can fix any face.
I think you have a great face.
Got a great face. Michelle, we are out of time, unfortunately. But I wanted to hang out with you because I've been watching your career for the last 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And I see the growth. I see the movement. And one of the reasons we interviewed you at Metro at the time was because we could see your trajectory and where you were going. Mm-hmm. That's why I needed to speak to you again, just to remind you that we see your work. We see the progress. We see the resistance, but we see how you are keeping it moving. And I think a lot of us could learn from that. That there'll be a lot of shit thrown at you, but you don't have to stop and smell the shit.
100%.
Just keep it moving. Mm-hmm. Where do we find you on social media?
Instagram at Mihlali, double at the end, _N. Mm-hmm. TikTok, Mihlali N. YouTube, Mihlali N with one eye. Mihlali N everywhere. And then Mimi Ndamase on Facebook.
Michelle, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You're an inspiration. And if you're in between jobs, please don't hit her up.
I can help you find a job, maybe.
Or you could offer to be the model for her range of makeup for men.
See?
So that is a plan. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
And that's it for our edition, this week's edition of Wow, What a Week. It's been quite a journey. And we decided to use our makeup room because she's going to make up my face after this to see if she can fix this. No offense, mom or dad. You guys did a great job, but she will finish off the job.
This is Wow! What a Week.
What a Week. Politics.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week. Wow is on the Africa Podcast Network, available on Spotify and all other platforms. We're not sure how many other people in South Africa share the name, spelling of his surname, but he definitely puts the moi in Mu'ilwa. Let's welcome back our MOI, as in our Minister of Interpretation, Botsang Mu'ilwa. How you doing, brother?
Good morning, Fresh, and morning also to the viewers and followers.
One of the big stories this week, President Ramaphosa signing the Electoral Amendment Bill for independent candidates to contest elections into law. Why is there such an uproar about this bill?
Finally, let's say it has happened.
Yes.
And the government has proved that they can actually pass a bill into law in less than the normal 5 years or 6 years they take.
Although they were late already.
They were late in terms of the Constitutional Court decision. Mm. But also, if you look at that, it was only deposited as a bill into Parliamentary Assembly in January 2022. Mm. So they moved faster than they did. Usually, thumbs up for that. I don't know why it's an uproar, but I've seen also some media houses, they are calling it a controversial, amended act or bill. I don't know what's controversial about it, because what it does, it creates an opportunity for individuals in the Republic of South Africa to can contest elections without belonging to or being affiliated or associated with a registered political party.
Mm.
And again, we have said before, we are a growing democracy. You know, we are still in an infancy stages. We are growing democracy, and it allows people. There's been a call to say, why don't voters elect who they want to lead this country. Let's say if Fresh decides to wake up and say, I'm going to contest for being the president of this country, indeed he will still be elected or voted to by the National Assembly or members of the National Assembly, who now are going to be including independent people. So that's basically what this law prescribes, and an opportunity creates for 2024 elections already, both provincial as well as national.
The IEC are saying if it's challenged, it could affect the elections in terms of it being delayed.
Absolutely. Yes. If it's challenged, obviously the legal process may delay the elections in the country. But this was unanimously supported, you know, by a number of leading political parties in the National Assembly. The ANC itself with, you know, most of the numbers, and the EFF. But again, who will be challenging it except maybe the DA may sit and say they are going to challenge it, but they don't have the numbers, and it was a Concord decision for Parliament to do. So I don't think it will make sense for anybody or party who goes to Parliament to decide to challenge, or to court to decide to challenge what the court has ruled on. Is it maybe the technicalities and the methods and modalities which has been put on the table may face, you know, challenges?
One of the big complaints is it bans a candidate from being on the proportional representation.
Yes, list. Yes.
Surely that's a problem.
It is a problem, and again, it gives a leeway to political parties to continue dominating. You understand? Yeah. So
how is that? So how is that democratic?
Look. Democracy is not a fair process at all times. It's a myth that democracy is fair. But the problem here is the majority of the people who will be voting inside the National Assembly or who supported this bill are bigger in numbers, and therefore that's where democracy works, you know, to the advantage. But I don't think it was just for this bill to go ahead and say individuals can come in, but you can't. It takes away now all the number of seats that you may benefit. It takes that away. You will go there on your own and you'll be a lone voice sitting in the National Assembly. I don't think it's a just process. And that could be a challenge. But again, it's a wait and see situation.
Should it be challenged or should we wait for the elections?
In my view, like I said, I've already said, I don't think they will win. But in my view, I think South Africans should rise, especially those individuals who are intending to stand up for elections. I woke up this morning thinking maybe that's the route I must start taking. I think it should be challenged. I think those individuals who are intending, who have the money, who can raise the numbers. I looked at the figures, by the way. If you are coming from Gauteng and you are contesting for provincial, you need about 8,900 signatures of people nominated. So it's not a lot. You know, individuals can achieve that. But I think they should challenge only that part. I have a problem with it, of the proportional seating and the number of seats one may occupy in the National Assembly.
Yes, because I read that, for instance, of the 400 seat, you can only contest 200 of those.
Exactly, because they have left half of that to the existing political parties. Again, that is not fair. That's not a fair playground. It's the same as people who are coming from outside Parliament and National Assembly saying political parties that are already in the system are getting grants from the IEC, and those that could not make it and they've already registered and paid, they must redo another process because they couldn't make a cut to a certain percentage. And I think it is not a just process, but it's a democratic process.
Thabo Bester is finally in the country.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, we wait and see as the case unfolds.
Exactly.
But one of the big stories right now is why was 1.4 million rand spent on a private jet to fly them into the country?
Well, I listened to the Minister of Home Affairs explaining. First of all, he was explaining why it came out of the budget of Home Affairs. I had expected it to come from the police, but remember, they were not, you know, abducted there by the police or Interpol. They were handed over diplomatically in Home Affairs and immigration processes. For me, it's upset that the government wasted a lot of resources, 1.4 million for the jet only. And let me tell you, I sat down and I did a thumbs up estimate of how much they would have spent. We are only talking about the jet, 1.4 million.
You flew someone from Brazil back in your days.
Yes.
And you flew commercial.
Yeah, well, there was no commercial flight. And they were, like I said before, there were South African and Brazilian police escorting that, you know, prisoner and myself as an
international consulate.
On a commercial flight, on an SAA flight, on a national flight. I don't know why it was it done this way, but the minister tried to explain it to say the Tanzanian authorities had actually instructed South Africans that they can only move those people in a certain manner. I do not think that an authority of an account can dictate to another one the mode of transport to use. I don't think that was an honest answer. But again, even if it's not commercial, we've got jets in this country that belong, at least two jets that belongs to the government. We could have just changed those jets, one to the Air Force and the presidential jet or whatever. Why? I understand that they needed a 14-seater to can seat nine officials plus Bethesda and so forth. Why not use the Air Force jet, go and spend 1.4 million? And that was not all. There's a lot of money. Bethesda is expensive. It doesn't come very cheap. There's a lot of money that has been spent on this guy. And I'll tell you, remember he was transported also from the airport, Lanseria, to Kgosimampuru, from Kgosimampuru to Bloemfontein and back. So this back and forth is going to cost us a lot of money. But there's also issues that these officials who traveled to Arusha, and some traveled from the embassy in Dar es Salaam to Arusha, it costed us money. It was not only the jet. The SNT, you know, which is the service and transportation, you know, allowance, accommodation, and all those things that were spent to go and bring Dr. Magudumana and Thabo Bethesda out of South Africa, it has costed us a lot of money. I think it's over 3 million.
Yeah.
That is, and it is just the beginning. More and more is coming. So it's an unfortunate situation. I know they were rushing. I know they wanted to be very meticulous with this. But you don't have to overspend money that we are struggling with in order to do the right thing. And I said, you don't have to do that. They should have used the Air Force jet. They should have flew commercially with all the necessary escort and put them. What danger were they posing? They were not armed people. They were already under, you know, detention. So what more harm could they cause?
They weren't even in chains when they got off the flight.
Exactly. So I don't understand. I think it was a fruitless and unnecessary expenditure that the government has incurred, which was uncalled for.
Now, Minister De Lille is axing the dysfunctional SA Tourism Board.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, this board, they resigned. The chairperson and seven other board members resigned while she was awaiting for an answer.
I was going to say, it's surely just formality to disband it because majority of them were gone anyway. I think, what, just three
seven.
Were left?
So only three were left.
Yeah.
But she had already issued letters to the entire board to say they must, you know, explain to her why shouldn't they be fired.
Sure.
For their conduct and the manner they behaved. And it's so funny how the conduct of the board members of South African Tourism was never in the media until the change of management or the change of political leadership. And suddenly the entire board was facing serious allegations. And for them to resign on those allegations, again, are they saying to the nation, yes, we did this and it was unjust, it was uncalled for? I mean, one of the things I read is that they were supposed to hold, for example, let's say 14 meetings.
No, I think it's a board meeting every quarter. It's
every quarter. Yes. But you can have ad hoc one and subcommittee meetings in total.
But they had a ton of them.
And they had over 50.
And they get paid each time they sit. Right?
Yes, they get paid. And there's a lot of money that was spent, over 2 million that was spent on them for having additional meetings. Some of those meetings, actually, instead of one per quarter, at some stage they had about 34 in a quarter. And of those meetings. And I think that, you know, I'm a preacher of the state must go and recoup those monies from those people. If people were unduly paid, unfairly benefited from state resources, the government must go for those people. They must pay back the money.
Speaking of boards, SAA finally have a board.
Well, the SSABC as well, SABC finally has the board, but SAA has a what the media and the people have termed a secret board that Minister Pravin Gordhan never consulted with the ANC as a normal practice. Nothing in the law forces a minister to consult a political party.
Okay.
This is not a prescription. It has just been a practice culture within the ruling party that the minister will consult because they've got a deployment committee. Sure. That coincidentally is normally chaired by the deputy president of the country. Now, Minister Gordhan did the unusual. He woke up and he decided, I'm not going to consult the ruling party that has deployed me. I'm not even going to tell the media. Mm. So he appointed this, what they call an interim board, and without public nominations, informing the public, why is he nominating those people? And boom, guess who he takes? His best friend, Derek Hanekom. And you can see in the history of the ANC in the last few years, how Derek Hanekom, as well as Pravin Gordhan, they've actually not been towing the line. They do their own thing, their own way, and they get away with it. So I think it's an unfortunate situation. Mm. You don't want to say you want to clean up a system and you do things in secrecy. If you want to clean up in a public office, clean up in a public space so that the public should know what are your intentions or what you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it has been the conduct and the behavior of Minister Pravin Gordhan not to listen to headquarters of the ANC. Good for some of us who are not from the ANC that one of them is defying them. But also it will cause chaos within the ruling party.
Mm.
And that will affect actually service delivery and how that board is going to function. Because some people will start revolting and rebelling against that board.
Mm.
And they may not even get cooperation from some of the deployees of the ruling party. So that's some of the challenges he may be faced with.
Let's leave the borders of South Africa and Africa for a second. Markus Huster failed to show up in a German court and now there's a warrant of arrest. Let's talk about that.
The warrant is not yet issued.
It's not issued.
According to the German processes, it may take some few weeks for it to be issued. But what the German prosecuting authority has done, they've requested the court in Oldenburg, that's one of the towns there where the case was being heard, to issue a warrant of arrest, international warrant of arrest for Markus Huster, which will take us to our story of last week, you know, the sending of a person from one country to another, extradition and so forth.
Mm.
I think they've got good grounds to can receive that warrant. I've read the and listened to the arguments of Markus Huster's lawyers.
What are the
One clumsy, lousy argument that he was not supposed to leave South Africa because of investigations in South Africa. And he didn't have his passport.
Did that alert the court, though?
No, the court did not buy the story because what the German authorities have done now, they contacted the South African authorities, the works, the National Prosecuting Authority, the Department of Justice, and the Asset Forfeiture Unit. Because remember, a few years back, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, you know, seized some of the assets that belongs to Markus Huster, whom I actually regard as good. You know, Markus Huster is actually the greatest thief of all times. I've never seen a person stealing so 200 billion rands from South Africa. And part of that money comes from the government employee pension fund. That he swindled, he's a thief. That's what we should call him. But also, the fact that he could not go and face music in Germany and say he didn't have his passport. Guess where is his passport?
Mm.
It's with his lawyers. It's not with the government. There is no restriction in South Africa at the moment from the government that says Markus Huster should not travel. Like when people are on bail, you know, to say don't travel, don't leave the country. There's nothing like that. So the passport was with the lawyers who now come and claim that they thought he could not travel. But I think the German authorities must stand very firm and arrest Markus Huster. He must go and face the court and face the music. The funny thing happened in that case again. His co-accused, who was his right-hand person in Germany and Europe, Evans, I think so. His case was thrown out because he couldn't appear on his own without Markus Huster.
Oh, yes.
So then he was given a fine or a penalty of 30,000 euros, which amounts to a mere 600,000.
It's a slap on the hand.
It's a slap in the hand to say bye-bye. But Markus Huster must still face this. This was a very big international fraud and scam, money laundering that he embarked on.
Mm.
And I know in the German authorities, they will not play marbles with him.
Speaking of battles, war in the Sudan, what on earth is happening there?
Back to square one after the guns were silenced in Africa for quite some time. Actually, I don't know how true the story is, but I saw somebody tweeting the other day to say, by the way, when the Zumas were at the helm of Africa. Jacob Zuma as the president of South Africa and Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma as the AU chair.
Mm.
Guns were silenced in the continent. I haven't checked and tested. I can't remember if there were any guns, you know, making sounds in Africa during that era.
Mm.
But again, in Sudan, it's a step backwards. It's a sad state of affairs. Would you recall that what happened in Sudan a few years back?
Mm.
These two generals, one is the army general.
They
actually ganged up against al-Bashir.
Yes.
And toppled him.
Mm.
So one was a general of the special forces. One was for the military account. They toppled al-Bashir. They took up and they said, let's go and run the country. Now the two people have caused this country. In less than 5 years, the country is in a war and the guns are blazing in Sudan. And guess who's suffering? The children, the women, and ordinary citizens. But you look also, this is where one should look deep into the politics there. Who is involved?
Mm.
It's the French and the Americans. Mm. One of these generals is backed by the French historically. Another one is in line with the Americans. You have Russia moving in there, one or two. But again, this influence comes from international forces and that are trying to influence the region. And we know the battle in Sudan is the same as in the GRC. We know what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's for the minerals, mainly the oil, and all other natural rich minerals that country possesses. So it's the battle and scramble for African minerals. And let's just hope and pray as a nation that the African Union must intervene swiftly and as much as possible for that war to come to an end. Otherwise, we're going to start experiencing unrest again within the Horn of Africa. And we don't need that as a nation. The continent must again go back to square one. Lots of efforts by the African Union forces. We deployed a lot of forces there. Also in South Sudan at some stage, Thabo Mbeki's efforts from the time he was a president and then envoy to Sudan, it's a wasted opportunity. We don't need wars in the continent. And I think what Africans should learn to do is to keep foreigners out of our domestic battles. If we can start doing that, the interference of the West particularly into our domestic battles and squabbles, that is the biggest problem we are sitting with.
Because often it fuels the situation. It doesn't help the situation.
It is in the interest of the imperialist to have wars. When Africans are busy killing each other, they are busy milking the ground.
Mm.
So it is in their best interest when there's instability in Africa.
I was about to say, it's not in their interest for Africa to work, for Africa to thrive, for us to get along, for us to trade and get along and not have begging balls saying we need aid. It's not in their interest.
No, it's not in their interest. And I don't think it is in the best interest of the imperialists to see wars ending in Africa and they thrive. You know, I've said in this platform before, a lot of these countries, particularly the USA, they thrive with, you know, economic wars, and that's the battles we are being faced with.
Are we recording?
But I...
Oh, sorry. Okay. No, now I'm recording. Okay, let's go.
Okay, yes, Fresh, I agree with you that actually it is not in the best interest of the imperialists, particularly the USA, to see, and France, you know, historically, to see Africa getting into peace.
Mm.
Because, you know, these are economic wars. They thrive with instability in most areas. So, as I've explained before, then they come and they talk of aid and building and reconstructing a country.
Mm.
But again, whilst we are being focusing on us negotiating ending wars and all those things, they are focusing on milking the minerals and resources from the country. And I think that's the way we should keep them out of, you know, our continent.
Mm.
And Africans must stop killing and fighting each other. It is not worth it. And we are not even fighting for those minerals. We are fighting for corruption and political power. And that's all. People just want to be in the hand of politics in order to run the country. But in this age, I don't know why do we still allow, you know, military states in the continent, because they have historically demonstrated that they create a problem and instability.
Mm.
So the United Nations Charter that talks of, you know, peace and security and all that, it's defeated by these militaries, which also do not come democratically. They come as military coups, you know, and that's the challenge we are faced with in the continent, particularly in the Horn of Africa and in East Africa.
Mm. In closing, Bosang, the G7 are meeting in Japan.
Yes.
And previously when the G7 would meet, South Africa would be the blue-eyed boy that gets invited to this exclusive group.
But this time around, the AU's been invited, not South Africa. As a former diplomat, in fact, as a diplomat, do you think it's to do with our associations? And should we be worried or upset?
Well, I would say we should be worried. Mm. This is a signal of the new world order and the way things are changing. Mm. You are correct by using the words blue-eyed boy. Mm. There was no need for those West and capitalist countries, you know, the G7 country, to invite South Africa only continuously and year in, year out from Africa. Actually, it has created a bad name for us amongst our African states. Mm. You know, African states were looking at South Africa, as you said, as a blue-eyed boy, as the West puppet, being controlled by the puppet, why them only every year?
We think we're better.
And we think we're better, we're a big brother, we think we're better than them. So it had created that problem. And again, what benefit did it give to us for sitting with those G7 countries? I don't think there was much benefit except being able to listen to superpowers talking to each other. There was no special benefit. However, Japan, being the current host of the G7 and the chair.
But they're the same guys who are saying we're going to start trading with Russia.
And that's what I was about to explain. That's where things are going. And if the world looks orderly, Japan to fight NATO and their sisters in the G7 to say, but wait a minute, we are going to start trading with Russia. We'll buy Russia's crude oil and we'll use the yuan, the Chinese yuan, or the Russian, you know, a currency to trade with. Who is Russia? South Africa's best friend at the moment, a member of BRICS. So it shows where Japan is actually saying to NATO and the West, we are not going to dictate terms for us. We didn't have to invite South Africa. We'll invite the African Union, which I diplomatically think it is the correct gesture. Mm. Why should South Africa, out of 55 member states, be invited to the G7 when there's a continental body that is representing over half or almost
a billion people.
Exactly, that can represent us. And I think it's a step in the right direction. But it also tells me how Putin is asserting himself with the support in Africa. And that's not all that happened. There are talks now, actually, talking about the G7, that maybe South Africa and Russia should swap the hosting in August of the BRICS summit. You understand? It must go to Russia due to the warrant of arrest after Putin. Let South Africa and Russia swap that hosting. South Africa will host next year if things have changed, but let it go. There is those talks and proposals at the moment. But I think we have too much problems at home. Let us sit here and focus on domestic problems than to Russia and listen to these rich countries going to plot and plan how they are going to exploit Africa. President Ramaphosa has serious problems to focus on in South Africa at the moment. He has just appointed Minister of Electricity. Things have got worse. And I think he's got a visit at the moment. Coincidentally, President Gbagbo of Namibia is in South Africa for bilateral visit to President Ramaphosa. And you know, these are the two gentlemen that have been mentioned in the Palapala saga. So we don't know whether they're going to be discussing Palapala or they're going to discuss bilateral relations. But again, I was very disappointed this morning when the president was being asked if they mentioned by the writer that Eskom, two ministers are involved in the corruption in Eskom. And he dismissed it. It's like, let the law enforcers handle this whole thing. If I'm being told that my children or one of my family members is involved in crime, I will not say the police will handle it. I will engage them. Is it not in his interest to know or to want to know who of my cabinet members are being mentioned by the blue-eyed CEO that I appointed to go and fix Eskom, and he was in the situation, and he says the situation got worse because two of your cabinet ministers are meddling with affairs there? And it's a very disappointing response that the president always, you know, he looks shocked and he shifts things to other people. But again, I think the president must stay at home. Let's leave the G7 to go and discuss what they want to do. The African Union will come and give member states feedback of what transpired there. It is the step in the right direction. It's a step to improve our relationship with BRICS member states. And China and Russia are sitting right there in the middle of all this.
Ladies and gentlemen, Botsa Ngwila, thank you very much, brother man. As always, very insightful. Very bold and possibly very upsetting to some out there.
Well, politics are not romantic right? Because, you know, people get upset with these whole things. But remember, the bottom line is one has to educate our people, inform the people, and tell the truth, even if it upsets others. Sure. And that's the direction I come from.
Absolutely. Butsang Muilo, find him on social media. Otherwise, please comment at the bottom, subscribe, and give us your thoughts on Butsang Muilo's insights and analysis. And we are done for this week. Wow, what a week with DJ Fresh. Hashtag Polytrix. Shout out to Amp Studios, Africa Podcast Network, Pezulu Works for our cinematography, our audio engineer, Otis the Flow Fraser. Shout out to our executive director, creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, and the show producer, Kelezo Mudisakeng. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Have a great week, in spite of yourselves.
This is...